Hello and welcome to the You Matter to Christ podcast. Many of our listeners and guests call this podcast an experience because throughout the variety of extraordinary people we have on the show, you'll hear stories of overcoming trauma, hitting record-breaking business goals, people forgiving the unforgivable, and yes, even miracles that will shock and inspire you. On this show, you'll hear from professional athletes, entrepreneurs, and everyday people from all walks of life. Discover the profound truth that regardless of your background or circumstances, you matter deeply to the Creator of the universe. You were made for a purpose, and you matter to Christ. Get ready for inspiring stories, personal testimonies, and uplifting messages that remind us of the unchanging love and grace available to all. And remember this, you matter to Christ.
Welcome back, everyone, to another You Matter to Christ podcast. I am here today with Richard Kaufman. Richard's become a friend. I was on his podcast. He is known as the Comeback Coach, and he runs the Vertical Momentum Podcast. What a better name, right? I've heard the term failing up and vertical momentum. What a better place to be. He also, I would say, goes with from dope dealer to hope dealer. And what a great term. So Richard, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on this amazing podcast. We finally got together. I'm so blessed and honored to be able to be here. Thank you so much.
It's been a month and a half since I was on your show, and I know we planned out maybe a week or so, and here we are a month later. So glad to be here. This podcast, I'm going to this National Broadcasters for Religious Organizations coming up in Nashville. And we're bringing the You Matter to Christ shirt to hand out while we're there. So we've got about 150 on order and pretty excited to share the word that you matter to Christ.
And everybody loves swag, so you might as well give out swag.
Everybody loves their swag. So Richard, to help our audience get to know your history and you, I like to go back to the roots, right? When you have some of your first memories, I think I've only met a few people who remember age two, so I usually don't start there. But some of your first memories when you're 5, 6 years old, what comes to mind for you? Where were you living? What were you doing at that age? What were you passionate about?
I came from a very abused household. My father left when I was 3 months old. My mother was an addict. We moved like 13 or 14 different places before the age of 11. Honestly, and I even wrote this in my book, I don't have a lot of memories from the age of 10 and below. The only memories that I do have is that one Christmas in 1977, I think I was 8. My aunt, my uncle, they both just passed, and my cousins, they drove all the way from New Jersey to Jacksonville, Florida, just to give out Christmas gifts. Because we didn't have any money and we were poor. So they drove 24 hours just to give us Christmas gifts on Christmas. But I don't really have any other memories besides hearing that Elvis died one day while we were in a supermarket and thinking that was in 77 too. But I really don't have a lot of memories from 10 years and earlier. I'm still working through some of that stuff. But
what I catch from that story, though, is important for our listeners. The difference. There's a song John Denver wrote, what one man can do is love. What one man, like the difference your aunt and uncle made in your life caused a long-term memory that you're now able to recall, and it's one of your only memories. So when we think as people, what difference can I make? I'm just one. We can make a difference in people's lives like Richard Kaufman.
Yeah, and unfortunately, like I said, my aunt just passed 2 weeks ago, but my aunt and my uncle, there was three separate times in my life that they were my angels. And one was actually, they saved me from going to prison for 5 years. And that they totally changed my life. And then the other time was when they drove all the way out to Texas for when I graduated basic training. Those three times, they were my angels all three times.
Wow. Yeah, your uncle and aunt sound like neat people. I bet you've
had them on. Yeah, they're actually going to be, I got a brand new book coming out, so it's going to be dedicated to their memory when it comes out.
Wow. What's your uncle's name?
His name was Robert Foglia, and my aunt was Aunt Sarah Foglia.
Aunt Sarah and Robert Foglia. That's cool. Okay, so before 10, that was a very memorable experience of bringing the presents. Love that. Now you're 10, 15, 18. What about high school days? What do you recall from then?
I had my first drink on New Year's Eve when I was 11, and I was a full-blown alcoholic by the age of 13. So I was that kid when you were growing up where your parents were like, don't hang out with that kid. That was this guy. I was that guy that your parents warned you about. But now I'm also the guy that if you're walking down the street and five guys walk behind you, you're the guy that I'm the guy that you want beside you because you know I'm going to fight for you.
Yeah. Wow. That's good visual because even then, the core under it all is a guy who's there to protect you. That's interesting. Yeah. Love it.
I've had my first drink at 11, full-blown alcoholic by age of 13. Got thrown out of high school for hitting a teacher with a desk in the head. And it was either jail or the military. And I joined the military. And I actually did both in the military, went to jail and became a soldier. And then after I got thrown out of the military, I got home for being a drug addict and alcoholic. I got home and almost got locked up for and had to do 5 years in prison if my angels didn't come and save me.
Wow. I live about 7 miles from where I went to high school. I'm back in my town and it's grown like crazy, Castle Rock, Colorado. And in my junior year, I had a mohawk that was 2 feet tall and bleached blonde tips and wore Dr. Martin boots. And I was the punk rock kid. Dad's a doctor. So it was, hey, look at me. Don't you see me over here? It was crying out for recognition or something. And what's interesting is I would like to skateboard from 10 o'clock at night till midnight. And I had a curfew of 10 o'clock. And so I got into it with my folks at that age to the point where they were going to send me to military school. I wasn't doing drugs. They thought I was, but I wasn't. And I had a teacher was my angel that actually said, Mrs. Resling, talk to my parents. They're going to send in people to come capture me from the school that day and take me off and put me in a military school. And my teacher pulled me aside and said, hey, Chad, this is the plan. Just I want you to know and be aware. And that was a wake up call. Wait a second. What are you talking about? I just like to skateboard at night. I can't empathize or I don't know what it's like to be in your shoes. All I know is that in my shoes, it was interesting because I was nearly into a military school and yeah, just wild. So tell me if your younger self were to come and knock on the door. Most people ask this question in reverse. They say, tell me about what you would tell the younger Richard. But I like to flip it and say, Richard knocks on your door right now and says, Richard Jr. and says, hey, man, how's it going? What do you think he would recognize and say to you about where you are right now?
I think we wouldn't say anything. I think we would just hug. I think because sometimes you could say something without saying something. And I think, like, even I have a 12-year-old daughter, and I was on a friend of mine's podcast about a year ago. And he said, you know what? Every time you talk to your 12-year-old daughter, you're talking to yourself. So for me, I think that he would just come up and hug me. And we'll both look at each other and be like, it's okay. And not even have to say many words. It's just hugging somebody and let them know, I'm here for you. I may not have a lot to say, but just know that I'm here for you.
Would there be anything where you go, hey, Richard, real quick, before I let you go, you should be doing a little bit more of this and a little less of that. You think there would be anything from his perspective to where what you're doing now? Or would he say you're exactly doing what you should be doing?
I think he would say, because the average American male lives to 78, I'm at 55. And I think he'd say, hey, you got 23 years left. You need to make it count more every day.
Make it count more every day. Wow. This is good, deep stuff. I know I've been waiting for this conversation. We're just getting started. Todd Saylor, you were on his interview. And
I love Todd Saylor. And I'm actually reading all of his books. And I love his book. And I wear his shirt Wired Differently every day because I am wired differently. And me and Todd, we're going to be doing something together. We're going to be going to speak at one of his events. So, guys, if you don't know Todd Saylor, you need to know Todd Saylor.
WiredDifferently.com. Buy the shirt. What a good way to open a conversation about Jesus, because Wired Differently, you don't have to buy with the one with the big cross on the front. If you want, you can, because they have it. But they've also got about 50 or 75 other really cool pieces of merchandise on their website. So I'm going to see him at the end of the month in a event in Florida. So looking forward to that.
He's amazing.
If you're around.
I love Todd. When I said I sold coffee, he's like, "You sell coffee?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "All right, send me 500 bags. I'm going to push it out to all my customers. We're all going to make sure that we're drinking Vertical Momentum coffees."
Without him, we
wouldn't be doing what we're doing.
When I went to his house, I said, "Where's your Vertical Momentum coffee?" And he said, "Look, right there." And he showed me the case. In his bedroom, he's got a little coffee maker. So he says, "There's some." And then he showed me in his other kitchen, he had some. I'm still drinking my Vertical Momentum coffee, and it's very good. All right. You made it through 10, 20 aunt and uncle stories. I find a lot of times we face a traumatic event or several. Many people have had several. I had three in 1 year, and it was like the hardest year ever, but it was also the best year ever because that's when God shows up. Is there one that particularly sticks out where you say, "Man, that was so hard, and yet there's God, there's Jesus in the center of it all"?
It was on a Tuesday morning, and the first tower went down. And that was the morning of September 11th, 2001. And I think it was 7:48 in the morning. I might be wrong on the hour, but where I'm sitting right now, if I go stand on my front porch, I'm actually standing in the shadow where the Twin Towers once stood. And we lost some people. We knew people that we lost in the buildings that day. And for me, I was about to be thrown out of the military for a second time at the end of September of 2001. But as I'm getting about to be thrown out, I'm watching everything on the big screen TV because it was all live then. There was no editing. And there were bodies hitting the ground, and you can hear them and you can see them. And all my stuff that I got to turn in is to the right of the TV. So I kept panning to all my stuff. And then I kept panning to watching the towers go down and the Pentagon get hit. And that's when I realized I wasted 27 years of my life. And these parents, they just went to work. They're not coming home. So for me, I actually cried out to the Lord. I crumbled in my chair and I said, "Lord, give me another chance. Give me a chance to help defend people that can't take care of themselves." And from that moment on is when I dedicated my life to helping others that can't help themselves. So 9/11 is very bittersweet for me because I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for 9/11. And we were talking before we got on here. I think the greatest day in Americans' history was 9/12, because that day we were all Americans. There was no African-American, Latino-American. We were all just Americans. For 9/11, I think that was my literal come to Jesus moment.
So compelling. And I get it. Wow. That's amazing. I think my brother-in-law happened to be in the building that morning, 20 minutes before it went down. And then he goes and gets in his car and he was driving home back to New Jersey at the time when the first plane hit the tower. So many stories. Another friend was in the air, and usually he would have flown on the 11th on the plane from Boston to Los Angeles. I think it was flight 11. Yeah. And that was his flight that he took every week for a long time. And it was a God moment that said, "No, Bill, you're not supposed to be on that plane that day." So many lives were changed and touched that day. So that's interesting. Wow. So next question, and this is obviously there, but I'm sure you have another one you can pull from the chest. When did God undeniably show up for you? I've heard some people said he yelled in my ear and told me not to date that person. Other times it's in a dream. Other times for me, I think it was my mother-in-law who I never met. And I saw an angel the day my son was born. And it was like, there she was for 5 minutes, right? It was like, wow. I met Jesus one time during COVID where I almost died one night. And I just felt the peace that passes all understanding. There's just so many times when you pay attention. Is there one big one that stands out for you?
Yeah. And I can tell you the exact day. It was Memorial Day, Labor Day, 2012. That was the day that I attempted suicide because I got hurt on duty. I lost 60% of my vision. And if you can't see, we can't shoot. We don't need you. For 23 years, I did everything after I was given that second chance. They let me stay after 9/11. And I gave everything I could to be the ultimate soldier, including my eyesight. And now you tell me where I'm no longer Sergeant Kaufman. Who am I? I don't know who Richard is. There is no Richard. There's only Sergeant Kaufman. And when they told me I'm no longer, that's when I attempted suicide. But it wasn't, I didn't hear a voice. I didn't see anything. But if you have a second, can we, I back it up a little bit just so I give it some context. What happened was I decided, okay, I'm no good to my wife because now I don't have a career anymore. I'm going to lose my benefits. I'm going to lose everything. So I decided in the National Guard, if you die on duty, your family gets like $500,000. I had until midnight to kill myself so she can get the money and take care of our family and our kids. So I called her and I said, I love you. I love the kids. I'm on my way. We were going down to the Jersey Shore to hang out for the weekend. But in my mind, I knew I'd never see my wife again. I knew I'd never see my six-month-old daughter again. I'd never see my boys again. But I figured that's the least I could do for them, is at least make sure they're taken care of financially. So I had a brand new truck at the time, a brand new Dodge Ram 1500. My goal was to the truck up to 100 miles an hour. I'm on a highway on 95 and put it on cruise control and turn the radio up. And eventually I'm going to go off the rails and hit a concrete barrier. As we all know, New Jersey's full of concrete barriers. So I did that. I got in the truck and I called my wife, told her I loved her. And I knew I was never going to see her, talk to her again. So I did that. I got in the truck. I got up to 100 miles an hour and I turned on the radio, closed my eyes. And I'm like, this is it. I'm done. And I could feel the truck creeping. And it's on the side of the road, you have those little yellow things where you hit the spikes and you can hear if you're going off the road or not.
Yeah, the little rugged area.
So I heard them and then I knew that I was seconds from death. And I closed, my eyes were closed and a song came on. It's by George Strait. It's called I Saw God Today. And it was about a father that was looking through the window at his newborn baby girl. And at that moment is when I realized God wanted me to be a husband. He wanted me to be a father. He wanted me to not become a member of the 22. And that's when I heard it through George Strait's words that I saw God today. And then I pulled over and I told my wife, I said, she wasn't happy if I told her what was going to happen. But I told her, if I don't get help, I'm going to eat my gun this weekend. And she told me, she said, honey, she said, I got your back. We're going to get you help. We're going to get you to the VA on Tuesday because Monday they're closed. But I promise you, I got your back. And I got to therapy on that Tuesday, and I've been in therapy the last 12 years. Yeah, God speaks to people in different ways, and I just heard him through a country song.
Wow. I just heard him through a country song. So if you're listening to this podcast, I will highly encourage you. You don't have to be in a car, hitting the grooves, listening to George Strait to have your God moment. Maybe this is it. If you're hearing this and you're touched by Richard's story, then take a pause and know that maybe this is God talking to you through Richard Kaufman right here so that you don't have to be in the 100-mile-an-hour car that's about to hit the freeway. Listen carefully. God loves you. And if Richard can make it through, he's the comeback coach. Maybe you should be getting on a call with Richard because I'm sure he'd be happy to have a conversation with you. Looking back, let's do that exercise, right? If you could, is there anything that anybody could have said to you at that time, or what would you say to you just had to go through the motions, right? God talked to you through George Strait's song.
If somebody would have just said, and it's so cliche, but it's so true, that it's okay not to be okay. Even in the Bible says, this too shall pass. It's just having somebody to say it, having somebody to listen. And that's the biggest thing to I talk to everybody. I don't have the answers. I'm only a ninth grade dropout. I've read 6,000 books, 1,200 interviews, blah, blah, blah. But I'm the best listener in the world because I'm just going to let you blab. And the reason why I tell people, I'd rather hear your BS than your eulogy. So sometimes if you have somebody in your family that's struggling, just listen. They might not need your advice. They just might need an ear or they might need a shoulder to cry on. So just be there for somebody to listen. And sometimes, if you notice, the most famous people in the world are some of the best listeners in the world. So just be a listener, not a talker. God gave you two ears, one mouth.
Be listening. That leads to my next question, which is, God's a great listener. Why do you pray? When do you pray? How do you pray? What is prayer? What role does it play in your life?
For me, I grew up, several abused men in my life abused me. Father left at 3 months old. I kind of didn't like the word. I go to church and they'd be like, oh, let's pray to our Father. And I'm like, until I started, I'm laying in bed and I'm like, because I believe that God is my dad, but I also believe that Jesus is my brother. So sometimes I'll be like, bro, I need your help. And I'll talk to him just like I would talk to somebody on the street. I'll be like, bro, you know what I'm struggling with. You know what I got going on. I just need your help. And then sometimes I'll, like last night, I was just like, dad, I need your help. And it becomes more real because then you're actually talking to your dad. Or if Jesus, everybody's, oh, Jesus is my brother. Why don't you talk to him like your brother? Because then it's a relationship. It's not religion. It's relationship at that point. So for me, if somebody having a problem, because a lot of people I know have been either abused by people, a lot of male figures, and don't like the word father, well, call him dad. Whatever you want to call him. Whatever. If you don't want to call him God, call him Jesus, whatever you want. But talk to him like he's a person. Don't be that guy that you're just asking for stuff. Because nobody likes that kid that just, I want. Like when I get up in the middle of the night to pee, because I'm at that age, at 3 a.m., I go to bed and I'm like, look, you know what, God? I don't want anything. I just want to say thank you. Thank you for the life I have. Thank you for my bride. Thank you for my kids. I don't want anything at this moment, but I just want to say thank you. And that's when the relationship deepens because you're not asking for stuff. You're actually communicating and then reading the word, obviously.
I had a guest on the podcast who couldn't have children, so they were looking into adoption, but he wasn't sure how he felt about it. And so he read books, he studied, he talked to people. And someone said, your dad, your physical dad, is more of like the host. Like they're the adoptive dad. Your real dad is God. And it helped him connect the dots to say, oh, because he didn't want to necessarily adopt because he's like, man, it's not my flesh and blood and everything else. But when he heard that story, it changed his whole perspective. Wait a minute. I'm a child of God. That's my dad. He's ever loving, forgiving. He's unconditional love. You can come back to him no matter how many times you screw up. And it's like when you can connect the dot, just like in an organization, there's solid line and dotted line. I'm solid line to God. I'm dotted line to my adoptive dad, who's my. And that really worked. I was like, how cool is that? Because I wear this cross around since the eighth grade. My grandma and grandpa gave to me from confirmation class at a Lutheran church way back in the day. And I've always had the relationship with God where even you're playing lacrosse on a field. And I remember at confirmation, they would say, I do, and I ask God to help and guide me. That was the statement in our confirmation standing at the altar. So I'd even be playing a lacrosse game in college, and I would look up and I'd say that little phrase, I do, and I ask God to help and guide me. And when your intention is a certain way, knowing God's behind your sails, your whole life can have a significant impact.
Yeah, and when you, like me, I know that I'm favored. In every situation, I'm favored because I'm a child of God. So I expect the best parking spot. I expect to get the best sales. I expect to be favored because if my father owns it all, and I know that I don't own it all, like I know that there's a beach house coming. I know that there's a brand new truck and a boat coming. And the reason I know it is because if I know that I don't own anything in this world, it's all his. If he'll let me drive the Kia, why won't he let me drive the brand new truck? If he'll let me own this house, he'll let me own the beach house as long as I know that it's not mine. I'm just borrowing it. And if your father, if you say my dad's a billionaire, you should have all the rights of that of your father that's a billionaire. So if my father owns everything, I should be able to own everything as long as I know I don't own it. And a lot of people have that mentality, because I'm a Christian, I need to be poor and pious. No, we need to walk in power. We need to walk to say, yes, I am favored. I expect to have a top podcast. I expect to be sneaking peeps on the biggest stages because I know it's not me doing. And if you give him all the glory, if you give him all the glory, like Brock Purdy said in the Super Bowl, if I give him all the glory, I can't lose.
Yes. So that, I love that, because there's, how do I put it? I've sensed that there's a couple camps in this area, right? When Jesus says, hey, leave your business behind and follow me, to the 12 disciples, I think a lot of people take that as, don't worry about it all, sell your house, you don't need anything, come with me. How do you rationalize? And then it's easier to get through the eye of the needle, the whole camel quote from the Bible. You've obviously rationalized that and understand deeply how that's not what Jesus meant.
If it's not mine, if it's his, and he gets all the glory and all the credit, because I know I came in on a steel gurney and I'm going out on a steel gurney. I own nothing in this life. So if it's off to give him glory and honor and help his children, how can I lose?
There you go. So it's, I don't own anything. I'm borrowing it. I've heard a good friend, Eric, say that before as well. I love it.
Like, for instance, those guitars behind your back. If God will let me play an Ibanez, why won't he let me have an American Strat or Gibson Les Paul? If I know that it's not me that's doing it, it's him.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And you hear the athletes talk about that soulful celebration the day before the Super Bowl. Everyone was attributing where they are to God. CJ Stroud, right? All these different players. It was really a very neat experience to watch that. Let's talk briefly. Good news, as God would have it, my next meeting was canceled. So I hope you're okay on time, Richard, because we're going into extra innings.
I told you about favor. Did I tell you about favor?
Yeah. I'm telling you, I don't know where it went. I don't know who I was supposed to be talking to right now, but it's white space, because God needs us to continue.
It's all about the favor, brother. It's all about favor.
Yes, it is. So let's talk about the commercial. He gets us. They did their first Super Bowl commercials last year, two of them, and there was a lot of good buzz post-Super Bowl, I think, from most people around the first two last year. They were like, did you see that? It created a ripple of conversations. This year, when I first saw it, my sister-in-law came over to me and goes, and she's in seminary school. I don't know if she'll ever be a pastor, but she's doing seminary school, and she knows my faith level. She goes, did you see that commercial? I'm like, yeah, I saw you watching over there in the corner of the room. Yeah, that was cool. And that was the feeling that both of us had from watching and hearing and feeling, right? And then the next day or two, I went into Twitter and I'm like, huh, I wonder what people are saying about it. And I couldn't believe the number of people that have such angst for what it is they saw and felt by watching that. What was your initial reaction? And then let's talk about some of the fallout of what they've been seeing.
If you haven't been paying attention, they've been doing this for years. So it's not like something new that they started. And if you travel a lot, you'll see on the side of the roads a lot. So if you haven't been paying attention, it could be a shocker. But for me, I was like, oh, it's right where it needs to be. And then when you have somebody like the quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers, Brock Purdy, saying, I give all glory to God and honor. For me, it was like even a non-issue for me, because I expect to see it, but especially because before we were coming on, if you watch some of the halftime show, if you watch some of the other stuff, there was a little bit of satanic stuff going on that were going on with the halftime shows, throwing up the devil horns and stuff like that. Nobody was giving a problem with that. It was, everybody had a problem when Colin Kaepernick took a knee, but everybody had a problem when Tim Tebow took a knee. It's all right. Pick one. Either we have the free speech or we don't have the free speech. Pick a lane. So that's the way I looked at it. And I'm like, you know what, God? You're in charge anyway. If it needs to be heard, there might have been somebody that, wait a minute, I thought God was mean and nasty and killing people, but here he is washing people's feet. If it was just one person that saw that and said, wow, he really loves me, then it was worth everything that was said or done.
That gives me the chills. For those that don't know the commercial that we're talking about, if you've read the Bible or you've heard about the Bible, then you would know Jesus washed the feet of the 12 disciples before he was crucified. I think it was at the supper, right? At the what they call the Last Supper. And so he humbled himself to 12 disciples. And by the way, one of those 12 disciples betrayed him later, right? One's a businessman, one's a tax collector, people from all different walks of life. So he humbled them, and it really shows what does it mean to be a servant leader, right? I'm willing to wash your feet and I'm willing to open the door for you. I'm willing to take a bullet for you, which Richard did when he was in the military. He was in the line, right? So that's being a servant leader. So what, same thing, when I saw it and Jesus is there, they have a lot of different AI generated photos. So there's one, a white person and a black person washing the feet. And I was like, that's awesome. And then they had a police officer that was washing the feet of a African-American guy. Oh, that's awesome. I was like, this is, yes, this is right. We should serve each other. We should love each other. We're all brothers. God's our father. This is great. And then they, now the ones I didn't really catch was the family planning center, right? Quote unquote, an abortion clinic. And that, I think there's a couple, and then there's one with a bus where they're busing people across the country. And that it causes some people who have strong opinions about certain things. And I don't like abortion. It's a bad idea. But God forgives, God loves unconditionally. So how did the girl that's sitting there outside of an abortion clinic, if you rewind the tape and ask, how did that person get into the situation? Does Jesus love her? And yes, he loves her equally as much as he loves me, as much as he loves Mr. Kaufman here. So that's what hit for me.
But now let's look at that real quick, because I've been reading the red words. That's why I said I read the Bible. I read the red words. And something that they talked about is they were asking, even back in when they had Paul, when he was Saul of Tarsus, he was one of the biggest murderers of Christians, or they weren't Christians back then, but he was one of the biggest murderers. So he would be along the lines of a Jeffrey Dahmer. He'd be along the lines of one of those serial killers that we always talk about, but nobody ever talks about the Saul before he became Paul. And God forgave him. And he said, even Peter, he said, whatever you went through, you're going to be my rock. So it doesn't matter where you come from. It matters where you're at. If you're struggling with, I've done these things so bad, nobody will ever forgive me. Just remember, Saul was one of the biggest serial killers in the world. And Jesus actually broke bread with him and washed.
This is the lesson that we all need to remember. Because if you look at the Bible, the Pharisees are the ones who would say, no, God gave us the laws of Moses. We've got to love your neighbor as yourself. And we got to do this and that. And how many numbers? There's some hundreds of commandments of laws that you must follow. Now, I talked at a fire pit to Dr. Jim Wilder, who wrote The Other Half of Church and several others. He came to my fire pit one night, as God would have it. And I asked, how does one make good, godly decisions in life? And he smiled. I said, I'm thinking of writing a book on it. And he goes, I already wrote the book. I was like, really? Good. Then I don't have to write it. What's the answer? And he said, there's X hundreds of laws. If you had to take in mind all of them, and I don't remember the 291 or some very big number, it's somewhere around there. He goes, to make a godly decision, you would have to consider all of those at the same time. And there's some that are a little bit conflicting. So he said, guess how many choices you may have? And I was like, I don't know, all the grains of sand in California. And he goes, no, every known neuron in the entire universe times 2 × 3.14. And I was like, okay, so infinity. Because you multiply anything by that, it's like there's an infinite number of choices. And we try to make the best choices that we can make. And sometimes we just don't. And so you're going to make a bad decision that breaks one of the laws. And if you break one of the laws, it's as if you're a murderer, because God doesn't look at it like that. He doesn't say Richard sins bigger than the other person's sin. He just, you sinned. So that's where the forgiveness, and no matter, to your point about Paul and Saul, no matter if you murdered somebody, like that's, wait, what? In our society, that's a very bad thing. To God, he will forgive you if you repent of your sin and say, I made a mistake. Will you forgive me and will you help me?
Somebody asked me the same question last week, and I just said, it comes down to two words. And I said, when Jesus was hanging on the cross, he had somebody on his right and on his left. The one gentleman, he never got baptized. He never spoke in tongues. He never did all the sacraments. All he did was say, and paraphrasing, obviously, I believe. And Jesus said, today you will be with me in heaven. So he didn't have to go through all the catechisms and didn't have to do all this. All he had to do was, I believe you're Jesus Christ. That's it. Simple. And we make it so complicated, but it's such a simple thing.
Richard, I went to a church in Charlotte. It's a Missouri Synod Lutheran church. And I went for 3 hours. There was a Bible study, then there was the service, and then there was a presentation about a sign they were trying to get. My aunt and uncle's church, my godmother. And the night before at dinner, they said, hey, you've been to our church before. You remember that if you take communion, you have to do a lot of things before you're allowed to take communion. I said, yeah, I remember. So they go, so you could just cross your arms and go up. And I said, what's funny is I was raised Lutheran. So I understand that it's real blood versus a symbol of the real blood. And so there's all those conversations and they have these such locked in rules and regulations. And then when I go in, the pastor in the morning in the Bible study talked about, hey, we have our beliefs and everything, but we need to be open for all the others because we follow Article 2 and there's Articles 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, all these different ways. What God commands is that we're open to everything else. And so I was like, yeah, get it. That's exactly correct. Good. Because what matters? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul. Love your neighbor as yourself. There's some basics that the two words you just said, I believe.
Even like what really got me is I read this book. Oh, actually, like I said, I'm an old guy. I'm an OG. I'm 55. And there was a movie in the 70s. It starred Eric Estrada from Trip. And it was a movie called The Cross and the Switchblade, the Nicky Cruz story. And David Wilkerson, which was a pastor, had his arms on Nicky Cruz's shoulder. Nicky was one of the biggest gang leaders in New York. And Nicky, all he said was, Nicky, just say you're sorry and you're forgiven. And Nicky looked at him. He's like, wait a minute, I don't have to do all this stuff. He's like, no, just say you're sorry and you're forgiven. Simple. It's simple stuff. But we're simple people that make complicated stuff complicated.
So when I went in to go in, the pastor, as I was warned, Chad, we're a pretty religious church. We have our beliefs. And you know, I just want to make sure you're on the same page. Are you Missouri Synod Lutheran? Have you signed off on the code or whatever the question was? And I go, I know. And I just give him this. So he goes, okay, good. I'm glad we're on the same page. So then I'm sitting in the back and they go through everybody. Everybody gets out of the pew, kneels, gets the bread and wine. And when they went around, they were like, this is the body given to you. And then some of the words used were like, anyone left in the pews, it's not given. It's really not for them. It's just for you guys because you did it the way and you checked the boxes on precisely the way that you were supposed to do it. And I just sat there and said, you know what? Think of all these flavors of religion. It's like paint colors in a paint aisle. Let's focus on I believe. So what we're talking about right now is so fundamentally important. And I believe is the next generation of faith is how do we bring more churches under one? And that's why I applaud people like Todd Saylor saying, let's focus on Wired Differently or Ignite Christian Business. Let's not focus on all these denominations with all those laws and rules. And let's focus on Jesus, right? It's Old Testament versus New Testament is what I've come to understand. Right? Yeah, the laws matter. When you follow Jesus, you're going to want to try to be the best person you can be, but it's not required. What's required is, I believe.
Yeah, but to break it down to the simple, today's day, we have these phones, we got these computers. We're not using the 1960s technology. That's the Old Testament. The New Testament is the iPhone, the cell phones. That's the New Testament. And even God says, I'm bringing something new. You still have to say, okay, they existed at one point and we respect it and know where you come from, but this is the new way of things, doing things. So if you just think of it that way, you just think, okay, Jesus came to give to do something new. And that's why it's called the good news.
There's a quote on that. Bryce McKinley, if you're listening to this, you should be on the Richard Kaufman podcast because Bryce stated that quote about a new thing at the beginning of this year, end of last year. And I do believe God's definitely doing a new thing. You can see it in all the NFL players that are standing up for their faith. You can see it in the revival that happened last summer. God's on the move, man. And it's just an honor and a privilege to be able to reconnect with you today, Richard.
I love it. It's my honor and privilege. And I'm glad that we get to hang out.
Wow. If you've learned something today, if you're in a moment, the U2 song stuck in a moment and you can't get out of it, listen to what God's sharing with you today. You don't need to get behind a wheel. You don't need to go 100 miles an hour and hit the pavement. You don't need to call Richard. Call me. I would take 2 hours of my day. I would fly on an airplane to meet with you if you needed me to. That's how believing we are. And don't take that lightly. I talked to a guy 10, 15 years ago, and I made a similar thing like this. And he goes, Chad, I'm about to go homeless. I've got 3 kids and a wife. And I talked to him for 2.5 hours one day. He sent me a note about a month ago. He goes, I'm retired. I've got a great home, a great family. I made it because of our conversation. So look, talk to someone. Jesus loves you. You matter to Christ. That's why we're here today. That's why God gave us the extra innings for the last 20 minutes so we could share more about his love.
Can I offer something to your audience?
Yes, sir.
If somebody, if they get in touch with you and they give you their email, I'll send you my 2-time top-selling book for free. They'll go right to their email. And if they want a coaching call with me, they get an hour with me to talk about whatever they want, health, fitness, business, whatever they're struggling with, they get a free hour with me just for me being have the honor of being on the show.
Man, thank you for that offer. It's amazing. Thanks, everybody, for joining another You Matter to Christ podcast. Don't forget, you matter to Christ.
Thank you for joining us on the You Matter to Christ podcast. We hope this journey has reminded you of the incredible truth that your life holds immense value and significance to Christ. As you go about your day, may you carry the assurance that no matter what you face, you are deeply cherished and loved. Remember, you matter to Christ. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to subscribe and share it with others who may benefit from this message. Stay tuned for more transformative episodes where we continue to explore the depth of God's love and grace. Until next time, remember that you are not alone. Christ's love is with you, guiding and strengthening you every step of the way. May your life be filled with hope, purpose, and the knowledge that you matter to Christ.